Terrorist bombings in Madrid this week killed almost 200 people and wounded 1,500. Iraqis got a new constitution, and in the United States there were new developments in the debate over gay marriage. Joining us to review the week's news is NPR senior news analyst Dan Shore. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning, Scott.
And of course, we begin with the chilling news from Spain. 10 separate explosions in Madrid during the morning rush hour targeted targeted commuters. I shouldn't say targeted commuter trains. They targeted the commuters on board those trains. The worst act of terrorism in Spain's history, worst in Europe since the Lockerbie explosions, Pan Am explosions over Lockerbie, Scotland in 1988. In this age of terrorism, as it's been called, what does this act in Madrid this week represent?
Well, it is really quite a stunning number of people. This is a country with only 41 million people. If you compare that in American terms, you would have really something hard to believe. Well, Spanish government now is set on trying to find out who did it. There isn't apparently very much in the way of evidence yet. The government would like to believe that it was done by the ETA, the Basque separatist movement that has carried out acts of terror before. Mm-hmm. They admit the possibility that it could also be an Islamic militant group, which I hope it isn't, because if it turns out to be, say, Al-Qaeda or something that comes from the Islamic Middle East, then the chances are that the government is in trouble because of its support of the United States in Iraq, and the theoretical possibility that this could be punishing the government for having supported the U.S. in Iraq. Since there's an election in Spain tomorrow, they have reason to believe and to hope that it was an internal thing, that is to say, that it was the Basque separatists, the ETA.
Of course, terrorism experts have warned that it's possible there are affiliations and confederations that would cross some lines of terrorist groups, although one may have planted the bomb, others may have been responsible for helping plant it. Not that I know anything about this, but these lines, we're learning, are not always hard and bright between these groups.
No, nobody knows, but obviously this whole thing sent a shudder through the United States, because we think in terms of, you know, here we're, if there's a, we have 9/11, now Spain has its 3/11 to commemorate every year. Furthermore, the American railroads on the whole don't have very much in the way of security. Mm-hmm. And when you suddenly say, oh my God, railways, what could happen? Suddenly there's a new awakening of, you know, the airports, we know what happens, and even they're looking at some cargo ships, but no one ever thought about the railroads. So now we have a new problem too.
I want to turn to Iraq, where a new constitution was signed on Monday after many delays, including the refusal of, I believe, five Shiite members of the governing council to sign that document. How does this advance the timetable to turn power over to Iraqis, and how does this constitution address or evade certain challenges?
Well, there was a timetable, which they missed by 9 days in the case of this constitution. And one thing was, then it was supposed to be an election or some form of election, and all these things had to happen on a certain timetable if it was to be possible to transfer power to the Iraqis on June 30th, which is what the Bush administration plans to do. Mm-hmm. The problem with the Constitution is a very interesting one, because the story here is the emergence of the long-oppressed Shiites, who are 60% of the population of Iraq, and they say, if this is to be democracy, we're the majority, and so we want to run things. Well, democracies also provide protection for minorities, and there was a great deal of back and forth as to exactly what powers the majority would have. In the end, it looked for a while as though the thing was going to collapse, but in the end, the Ayatollah Sistani, the religious leader of the Shiites, decided to advise to go ahead with this with reservations, with the idea that when we get around to a more permanent constitution, we're going to change it back again so we can exercise our powers. Mm-hmm. That's kind of saved the day for Administrator Bremer and for the Bush administration, and they're at least, well, there's still violence going on, but they're still back on track headed towards June 30th.
And let's ask about events in Haiti, where the rules of engagement for U.S. Marines changed this week. They now have the authority to seize weapons from any armed Haitian and open fire if that becomes necessary, if fired upon. Is this looking like it might be a more consequential involvement than people might have projected at first?
Well, the Marines have killed two more gunmen, making a total of six. The Marines say they're going to disarm anybody or these people who go around with guns. And in order to be able to do that, it may well be that they'll have to be reinforced. They don't have very much of a force now. And as always happens, you start with a few and then there are a few more.
And let me ask about Jean-Bertrand Aristide, the ousted president. He is due to go to Jamaica on Tuesday.
Yeah.
He's been given permission for a visit that can last up to 10 weeks.
Right.
The interim prime minister, Gerard Lotortu, has referred to Jamaica's... Have I mispronounced that?
People are looking at me in the...
He's no longer interim. I beg your pardon. He, right. Of course, that's right. He's been sworn into office.
Yes.
But the prime minister has referred to this as an unfriendly act.
Well, Aristide will be on the island of Jamaica, which is only 100 miles from Haiti. So he's back as a force in the Caribbean. It was much preferred that he stay in the Central African Republic. Even some talk, perhaps, of being given asylum in South Africa, but that would not happen until after the South African election in April. And he's more of a force in the Caribbean than he is in Africa, and so this is not a welcome development.
Let me ask you about the campaign season once again. Oh, my word, this is going to be going on for the next 8 months, and I'm not sure I'm ready to ask a new question each and every week. Candidates have already begun with ads, attack ads, I think they might fairly be called,
right.
As a matter of fact. There are ads from the Bush-Cheney campaign this week criticizing Senator Kerry's tax proposals.
Yeah, well, I think it starts with the fact, first of all, that the administration, I think, is a little bit nervous about the fact that all the polls indicate that if it was the election held today and it was to be Bush-Cheney against Kerry Edwards, that it would be almost exactly even.
Mm-hmm.
And that is not where they hope to see it. And other polls indicate that a majority of Americans think the country is on the wrong track. So they're acting a little bit nervously. And the kind of attack that you might expect in the last days of a very hot campaign, we're getting, even as the campaign starts now, sort of from both sides. They really skipped the polite part that we're supposed to have. Also, eight months is an enormous amount of time from now until Election Day. I don't recall a campaign that lasted that long, and I have a sense that it's going to get uglier before it gets better.
Several developments in the gay marriage debate this week. California Supreme Court ruled that gay marriages in the state will have to stop, at least for now. At the same time, the Attorney General of Oregon said on Friday that even though state law forbids counties from issuing marriage licenses to gay couples, banning gay marriages probably goes against the state constitution. And then lawmakers in Massachusetts have given preliminary approval to a state constitutional amendment banning gay marriage. Go ahead.
Go ahead. I think this thing is going to go like the election campaign, and undoubtedly will play a part somewhere in the election campaign if either side can figure out how they can benefit politically from this. But this is getting to be such a totally tortuous process. The general line is civil union, yes, marriage, no. Then it takes various forms as state constitutions rule, let's say one thing. Question then becomes if Massachusetts, which is now considering the question in the legislature, comes out and permits it, will those marriages be recognized in other states? It is a vastly complicated, painful question, and where it ends knows God.
Thanks very much, Dan Shore.